Gordon Liddy is my muse. Hollywood Before the Mast. 6. The Tonight Show, with guest host Jay Leno sitting in for the elemental Mr. Johnny Carson, is coming right up, inside a plain soundstage and a plain parking lot in plain Burbank, a neighborhood of greater L.A. But first, some remarks about papermate Captain Ahab of the most unplain whaler, Pequot, out of New Bedford, Massachusetts. Sci-fi spy guy Herman Melville, a black-and-white Puritan like Tip, wrote Moby Dick before he went bananas and moved back to New York City. I get a lot out of the book by just hanging around its scenes, replaying its wacky dialogue. Moby Dick is best understood as Melville's preliminary madness. He was uncommoning his sense in search of a big, air-breathing fish that is anything you want it to be, but that I read as Herman Melville himself, swimming from what it is to be a sci-fi spy guy trapped in 1850 America. Herman was in pursuit of Herman. I'm trapped likewise a century later, so maybe Moby Dick is funny to me, first page to last, and a wordy illustration that though there's no escape, there's make-believe. The book is heavy on biblical chatter, classical idolatry, and whale talk. It's also very, very light on love stuff. It's a first-person fishing yarn that Ishmael, the narrator, makes stunning. Not because Ishmael's a smart guy, but because Captain Ahab is a tough guy. Not thinks he is. We're told Ahab's tall, straight, bronzed, robust, that he looks as if he's been cut away from a steak after a fire has failed to consume him. That he's got a livid white streak branded down his right side. The detail everyone knows best is that white peg leg of whalebone that Ahab plants on the quarterdeck like a pagan pedestal. The impression Ahab gives is raw fury with a mad motive, to kill the wild white animal that took his leg. But there's another detail, often overlooked. Ahab was playful, what trendy slang calls a player. He responded to fair weather with, quote, faint blossom of a look. He did that neat trick with St. Elmo's fire flashing down the harpoon to light him up like neon. Mad as he was, he still plied whaling waters to make a good catch. And even when he lost control and went after Moby Dick like only Ahab could, he played out his role as tough guy with ham-boned speeches that have a whiff of sci-fi spy glee, such as, there's a riddle might baffle all the lawyers backed by the ghosts of the whole line of judges. Like a hawk's beak, it pecks my brain. I'll solve it, though. My favorite Ahab monologue is during the final battle. It contains choice lines such as, I grin at thee, thou grinning whale. Oh, 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 thou grinning whale. But there'll be plenty of gulping soon. It's Ahab's playful hamboniness and grinning gulping I want you to fix upon. This is another tough clue about Kate's, like the one Yaki gave me about her cheating at golf. A none softer clue is Kate's whalebone white teeth. Watch them closely, snapping and grinning and confessing in gulps. Try to solve the riddle that might baffle all the lawyers backed up by the ghosts of the whole line of cruel judges. That evening I popped out of Yaki's limo in the Burbank parking lot, fixed upon surviving the Tonight Show. Yaki interrupted his phone call to say he'd pick me up right here when I was released. We'd go to a fantasy restaurant and await the tape-delayed network broadcast. His good luck speech was, don't even think about putting. Make nice and try to smile once for... He waved the receiver, reminding me I'd called home on the ride to Burbank. For your mom and mine. When you do national television, be aware that it's not fun like a circus or glamorous as it looks. It's a business. Nice people guide you to a windowless place that's traditionally called the green room. Modern TV has its own traditions. So, tonight's green room is silver mirrors balanced around the biggest looking glass of all, a discreet TV monitor that demonstrates its obsessive authority by being blank while awaiting the taping of tonight. Other nice people provide light snacks and leave you in soundless quiet. There's a clock face, and you watch it. There are other guests, too, and amateurs like Tip don't know what's polite to say in a strange room with strangers. The others are here for something, But there aren't name tags, and no one's standing by to do introductions, such as, "Yes, this is..." famous head. The pros who do TV for a living often arrive with their buddies and chat quietly about unexplained events. If you want to be stonily alone, the niceness of the green room makes it possible to do so in a group, as only a lifeboat might provide. Jay Leno visited us momentarily like a crew coach, but I was too anxious to do more than avoid him, and he let me be. I did stare once at the major guest that night, but as soon as she came in the room, and it was a mistake. Faye Dunaway smiled back, said something human like, "Hi," and I was terrified by the time I returned a similar greeting. I failed to find saliva to say what Yaki had advised, that she and I had met once before at my gym in New York City, where I had helped her with a tricep machine. I wasn't frightened of her. She's nice, too. Though to have Bonnie, Milady de Winter, seated several feet away, being gorgeously real, is not for fickle hearts. I was frightened because this was indeed the wings of a timeless and boundless stage, and I knew then I was a watcher, not a watched, a crashed, not a crasher. To be exact, a nobody, nobody, nobody. Smoke is more than I was in those mirrors. The TV monitor popped bright on cue, and there was the theme music and Jay Leno doing a nice monologue about doing a nice monologue. I tried to pretend I was at home. The green room emptied like a lifeboat in reverse. The least shall be last. I kept visiting the men's room until another nice person came for me. "Mr. Payne," she said, "it's time now." I don't recall any sense but smell. The Tonight Show smells like industrial shampoo. Before I was out into those harmful lights and shaking nice hands. Who knows what was said? I never did watch it. You're in a time tunnel and it becomes teleportation and you're headed into the cosmos as photons forever. By my calculations, I'm in thin space by now, a year short of the nearest next star. I blinked and blinked to interstellar commuters. The nice audience applauded on cue. Faye Dunaway had left. Up close, Jay Leno's jaw is calming, as Dudley Do-Right's must be too. During the commercial break, Jay Leno, who is also nice, told me we only had N minutes to go, and he'd skip down the scripted Q&A, past my funny name, and funnier books to get to my movies. Then we were back on photons, and Jay Leno said, "Here's a clip from..." And the monitor above the lights was showing 30 seconds of my trashy hit featuring the Olivier evil scene. Picture Prince Hamlet as the greatest pipe smoker of all time, Joseph Stalin. Up to this point, I had obeyed Yaki by making nice and smiling ones for our moms. I was not in control. I was in a script, and I answered about Moosehead Lake and ice fishing correctly. I must have said something TV because the audience laughed. You feel as if you're being cheered for making a give-me-putt. Still, I was holding on to Yaki's early instructions. Smart is a no-no. It sounds like taunting, and very smart means you're a dog-beater. Don't, tipster. Then there was 1 minute to go, according to the camera guy holding up one finger. You know trouble's coming. Here it is. Jay Leno departed from my script, though he kept to his own. He asked me, "What's next, Tip?" I froze. He tried, "Come on, you can tell us. We can keep a secret. There's only you and me here." Laughter. "You gonna land a flying saucer in Moscow?" Laughter. "And a good idea, Jay. You gonna try a love story?" De-icing, I returned that a love story was sci-fi at war with spying. So not for me. No laughter. Jay Leno, the complete professional, tried his wrap-up query. "Well, we've got spies too, Tip. And we hear you're going to kind of let King Kong win this time. A happy ending. Hey, am I right? Am I?" I was freezing up again, but not so much I didn't mutter affirmative. Jay Leno chuckled professionally and said, "Can't wait. We'll get him for a guest appearance. And if you'll put in a good word for us, but hey, tell him. Please say, sir, we pay scale no matter what you weigh." The audience loved it. And to be fair to Jay Leno, he was not wrong to give away what Hollywood calls the high concept. To kill the beast. He was reading from what his research people had given him. Guess who'd given it to them? Right, not Yaki. Tonight was behind me, and I got out of the soundstage and back to Burbank after some nice farewells. I was not clear-headed, too vain to do more than try to remember what I'd just done and left, so I hit the parking lot without noticing it was drizzling. The nearest limo glided toward me, and the chauffeur jumped out. I thought it was a Tonight limo, which I'd not needed, so I waved him off and looked for Yaki's car. The unknown chauffeur continued around to open the passenger door, and there was Kate's, snacking on veggies. "I couldn't wait to see you, Tip. I'm sure you'll be wonderful for 30 million other people," was her entrance line. She looked out from the cozy warmth of her vast German auto and showed those teeth. I backpedaled instinctively. She waved a cauliflower and got cute. In all the parking lots and all the world, I was just driving by and thought, why not this one? And then, me blinking in the rain, she got cuter. "I know you don't know what time it is, Munch. Want to go find a clock?" She was not dressed for scary wailing. She was in burnt earth colors, looking casual and scholarly, like a millionaire book lover. I proudly reported that I did not jump head first. I mumbled and reached for a miniature tomato on her plate. Then I declared that Yaki was picking me up and maybe we could meet later, maybe. "I understand," said Kate's most maturely. "I really do. You go home with what got you there. It's what makes you lucky." She laughed. I laughed. We laughed. And there was suddenly a place for us to visit called Giddiness. Still, I didn't go. I wanted Yaki. I wanted his debrief. I wanted his permission. "Where is he?" Kate asked. Of course she knew. He was where Yaki goes when betrayed. Away. "I want to tell him how sorry I am for doing business the other night like that. I was out of line. You're his client, and I respect that." All this was intimate patter, you understand, because she was no longer using the royal we. She continued affectionately. "It's this business, Tip. Sometimes when you don't move fast, you don't move. Do you understand? And forgive me? Easy charity is the way to this traitor's fortress heart. But not yet. I was holding to my latest rewrite, where I apologize to Yaki for Kate's, and Yaki says, forget it, Slyboots, and Kate's and Yaki make up, and we three go off to be friends and make movies, and then..." Nonetheless, my draft needed Yaki, and he was not showing up on cue to rescue Tip, who didn't want to be rescued. Oh, Yaki, if you were only less Yaki and more ordinarily a person who likes to repeat things until I get it too. But no, Yaki tells you his theme, and then he improvises until you surrender to his genius. "Do you see him yet?" asked Kate. "Is that his car over there?" "No, no. A few more minutes of eating vegetables with terrific dip and patter about golf, the weather, and my camp on Moosehead Lake." Anything but the business. Kate was not going to scare me off with that again, though she might have guessed I was way past caring. More no Yaki. Finally, Kate closed the distance. "It's raining, Tip. You can wait in here. I don't, you know. I don't..." Pause. "Like men like you." And then she ham-bonily snapped those whalebone teeth on a radish and closed the door on us.